We extend Christian greetings to each one gathered here. Welcome each one to this part of the service. I must say that I desire a continued interest in your prayers for me as I share up here. I feel like there's way more to be shared than what I can hold in my head. My desire is that we can all receive a blessing from God. I was blessed this morning in the devotional, and certainly when they were in prison there, the Philippian jailer, as we heard this morning, they were certainly sitting in high places in Christ to be able to sing like they were. For the message, there is a scripture that talks about the Old Testament being a schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. And it is my desire that our thoughts can be turned towards Christ. It's all about Him. The Sunday school lesson we heard today was scriptures in Isaiah that pointed to Christ, the Messiah. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 22, it says, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." I would like to briefly at some point today touch on a man whose eye was not single. It was a man who knew how to connect with God, but he was a greedy man, and would like to also elaborate a little bit on greed. That might be something that you think, well, I have no problem with greed. Pray for me as I endeavor to share. Last Sunday, we heard about the spies that were sent into Canaan, and how that 10 of those came back and had an evil report. And I would like for us to get a true picture of how things were in Old Testament times. Have you ever wondered what it would have been like to have been born in Old Testament times, to live life as an Israelite? You know, today we so look forward sometimes when we go camping. How would you like to camp for 40 plus years? You know, the Bible tells us that we are to fear God and to keep His commandments. Why is that so important? We hear so much in our day about God being a God of love. Why should we need to fear Him? Well, let me tell you, the Bible would also say that God is also a God of wrath. And He created the universe and everything therein, including us. May our lives bring glory and honor to Him. And may we not arouse His wrath. Because this same God that the Israelites served and lived under, they lived during a time when His judgment was meted out swift and sure for punishment to the evildoers. And especially when you look at Moses as being a leader. You know, sometimes you school board, your teachers, maybe you take the school children on a field day, and you feel like your hands are kind of full with being in charge. How would you like to be in charge of over 1 million people? One thing that Moses had going for him, he did not do that alone. So I would like to ask this question: are you doing your life alone? You might not be in charge of a school, but if you're in charge of a family, or if you're responsible for younger siblings, your life can be so much easier if you do life with God. And we as a church family, we do life with each other as well. We do good to love each other, to care about each other, to exemplify the character of Christ. But to get us a picture in how blessed we are to live in the new dispensation, I would like to read chapter 14 of Numbers. And we'll be elaborating out of that a little bit as we go. But we've got quite a bit of ground to cover. So continue praying for me, and don't only listen to what is said up here, but allow the Spirit of God to speak to your hearts as well. Numbers chapter 14. Now this was with the 12 spies having come back. 10 of them had an evil report. And this will speak of the wickedness, the thing that Israel did that aroused God's anger. And it also speaks of the punishment that was meted out to Israel for their sin. Numbers chapter 14, starting in verse 1. It says, "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" I'd like to pause here briefly. How did this look and feel to God after Israel was so miserably enslaved by Egypt, and he had so victoriously brought them out, took them through the Red Sea crossing? He brought water out of a rock, and the many other miracles that he did to them. And here they were disgruntled. They were angry at Moses for bringing them out. They had got a picture through the evil spies' report of the giants in Canaan, and they looked at that as too big an obstacle for them to be able to overcome. And when you have a big crowd of a million plus people, and you have a rebellious sentiment starting up, how do you think Moses felt? And later on here, we'll read how that they would wanted to stone him. Here they said, verse 4, "And they said one to another, Let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us, fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel." You know, Moses was doing life with God, and I said Moses did not do this alone. But what would have happened to Moses when the children of Israel were wanting to stone him, and Caleb and Joshua and Aaron, if the glory of the Lord had not come down and appeared to them? I think that startled them. That got all their attention. That put a pause to it. And if we look at this, now this is the Lord speaking to Moses. Verse 11, "And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them, I will smite them with a pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they." And now here Moses is speaking, interceding, but he is telling God, you know, how this is going to look to the people around them. And Moses said unto the Lord, Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of a cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee shall speak, saying, Because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he hath slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great according as thou hast spoken, saying, The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people according unto the greatness of thy mercy. And as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. And the Lord said, Now this is the Lord speaking again. I have pardoned according to thy word. When Moses communed with God, the Lord listened to Moses. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice. This is one thing that I would like to bring out in Deuteronomy chapter 6. It tells us that we are not to tempt the Lord our God. When Satan tempted Jesus in the wilderness, Jesus reminded Satan that it is in the scriptures, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. And here, because he had shown them all these miracles, shown himself strong in their behalf so many times, and now they were not trusting him anymore to bring them into Canaan. And this really aroused God's anger. He had shown himself so clearly to them, and he said, Now they are tempting me. Tempting me now these 10 times. Verse 23. Surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. I'd like to draw just a little bit of attention here to Caleb having a different spirit. You know, in the New Testament, we are told that we are to try the spirits, see whether they be of God. When you have a spirit of jealousy, envy, greed, anger, any of those spirits, we need to try the spirits, and may we not allow any spirit that is not of God to have a platform in our lives. God was blessed with the spirit that Caleb had. Maybe it may even be a spirit of discouragement. That is what the children of Israel struggled with here. Discouragement. That also can be an evil spirit. Verse 25. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. This was still the Lord talking, giving direction to Moses. Verse 26, And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say unto them, As truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. If you look at verse 3 that we already read in this same chapter, they were accusing Moses and saying, why did you bring us out of Egypt? It would have been better for us to die there than for you to bring our children here into this land, that they would be a prey to the Canaanites. They saw the kings that were over there. And now Jesus is telling Moses that these ones that they looked at as going to be a prey, those are the ones that he's actually going to bring in here into the land. Verse 32, but as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of the days in which ye search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. The spies were spying out the land for 40 days, and he was meting out a judgment here, a punishment, a consequence for their sin. They would have to spend a whole year in the wilderness for every day. 40 years. I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land. I would like for you to take note here that this happened almost immediately. These 10 men that brought up this evil report were killed before the Lord, but not Caleb and Joshua. Verse 37, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord, but Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. They got sick and died just like that. But the two that tried to encourage Israel, they were not affected by that plague. Verse 39, and Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And they rose up early in the morning and got them up into the top of the mountain, saying, lo, we be here, and will go up unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. Now this is another thing I would like to take note. These people might have repented, but they still didn't get it. They repented too late. Let's see what Moses says further. And Moses said, wherefore now do ye transgress the commandment of the Lord, but it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that ye be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and ye shall fall by the sword, because ye are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up unto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt in that hill, and smote them and discomfited them even unto Hormah. Those people thought that, oh, we have sinned. We'll go on. We'll take courage now and we'll try. And they went on their own. How many times do we go down wrong paths, and instead of coming back where we went astray, we just try to go on from there and figure out our own way back instead of allowing ourselves to be told? They did still not realize the importance or the sin that they had committed against rebelling against the leadership that the Lord had set over their lives. When we rebel against leadership that God has set up over us, it's actually rebelling against God. Just a note. How do you think Moses, Caleb, and Joshua felt? Here they were so close to coming into this promised land of Canaan that God had promised for them. So close. And then because of the people, they had to waste another 40 years in the wilderness. Do you think they struggled with loving those people that they were called to lead? The punishment that was meted out for these people's unbelief, these people's discouragement and succumbing thereto. Good people had to suffer with the bad. 40 years of their lives, instead of going on and experiencing Canaan, they were now made to suffer with them. Wander for 40 years through the wilderness. And when you look at the wilderness, I picture that as a dry, warm, very warm place. But they embarked and they moved from place to place, warm and dry. There were probably times when they were drenched in sweat. And then cold and wet. They were dependent on the weather. But during that time, God sent them manna for food. And I've often wondered how manna would taste. But day by day went by, years and years went by, and I think Moses, Joshua, and Caleb were counting the years. Many people died. More people were born. Finally, after 38 years of those 40, if you look in the side column of your Bible there, my Bible gives a time frame there of B.C., so many years. And if we step up to chapter 21, it gives another one. And it looks like there are 38 years are now gone. Then all of a sudden, Israel was confronted with a Canaanite king who came out and fought against Israel and captured and took some of them prisoner. And out of that, Israel vowed a vow to God that if he would help them overcome these people, fight them. This was now a new generation of Israelites. Most of the others had died, but not near all. They were 38 years in. But I like to think that a new generation of people, 38 years, people being born, fighting age people, they vowed this vow to God and God heard them. And so they went out and they had a big victory over this Canaanite king. And so their vow was that they would utterly destroy his cities if God would let them be victorious. And so they did. God helped them. But soon after that, the Israelites became discouraged again because of the way. And then they started this same murmur again. It says that they were discouraged because of the way. If you read in verse 21, in chapter 21. And they again complained about Moses bringing them down out of Egypt to destroy them in the wilderness, and that it would have been better if they had died in Egypt. And so the Lord sent fiery serpents among them. And I don't know, but I, in my mind, I imagine that when you got snake bit, it might have felt like a drop of liquid fire on your skin. But they were called fiery serpents. And whoever got bitten would die. You know, we were always taught, don't never let get snake bit, you know, you could kill you. Well, I think this venom worked very quickly, killed a lot of people. And then it kept going on until the people repented and came to Moses and said, "We have sinned." And this time they looked at Moses as their leader. And they got Moses to pray for them, and he did. But God did not take the fiery serpents away, but he told Moses to go and erect and make a brass serpent, hang it up on a pole, and if anybody got snake bit, they would have to look at that serpent up on the pole, and they would be healed. They'd come well. And that was a big breakthrough. And the same way we look at sin, if anybody gets bitten by the serpent of sin, we look to Jesus Christ hanging on the cross. He paid the price for my sin. And there we can find healing for that infection, the serpent of sin. After this, they confronted the Amorites. They came to a place, they wanted to travel through Edom, and they sent a message to King Sihon and wondered if they would stay out of his vineyards and not drink from his cisterns, if he would allow them to pass through his land. And his answer was, he came out with the military and fought against them. And Israel had a big victory over him, over his people. And then it goes on over, and they were also confronted with King Og of Bashan. I would like to take note a little bit here. In Amos chapter 2, verse 9, if you want to look this up sometime, it talks about the Amorites, who were tall as cedars and strong as oaks. It says that in Amos chapter 2, I think it's verse 9. And how big do you think those people were? In Deuteronomy chapter 3, it describes King Og. It does not say how big he was, but it says how big his bed was. When you sleep in your bed, or if you make a bed for yourself, you will probably make that bed a good little bit wider than yourself and a little bit longer than what you're tall. You know, I've slept in a bed one time where I was longer than the bed, and your feet kind of hang out over, and it's just not very comfortable. Well, if I would make me a bed, I would make that the bed would be a little longer than I was. But according to the tablet in the back of my book is a table chart, and it talks about cubits. And in Deuteronomy chapter 3, according to those measurements, King Og of Bashan, his bed was like 7.3 feet wide, and between 16 and 17 feet long. So I'm inclined to think that he could have been 14 to 15 feet tall. But Amos just describes it as tall as cedars and strong as oaks. That's how he described them. Another point I would like to bring out here in Deuteronomy, it also brings out that Moses pleaded with God to allow him to go into this goodly land. You know, it was during this 40 years, if I'm not mistaken, that he messed up and he smote the rock instead of speaking to it. And God said, because you broke a type, you're not going to go into the promised land. And in Deuteronomy, we read that Moses pleaded with God to allow him to go in. And God told him that he is not going to come into that land. He's going to let him see it. But he is not going to come into that land, and I don't want you to bring it up again. How serious it is when we anger the wrath of God. We are so blessed in living in the new dispensation. You know, so Moses, when he was not able to go into Canaan itself, after he had fought this battle against these Amorites who were tall as cedars and strong as oaks and had victory, He encouraged Joshua before he died that the way that they had victory over these kings, God is going to help you in that same way when you lead Israel into Canaan. Moses accepted it to not go into Canaan. But a lot of times, you see, Satan brought these kings out to fight against Israel. And a lot of times when he is unsuccessful with one thing, he tries something else. And now we come to this man who did not have a single lie. His name was Balaam. Israel was so vast in numbers by this time that they encompassed the land. And Moses was still leader. They encompassed the land, and the king of Moab was Balak, and he looked out and he was scared. He had heard what they did to these Amorites, and so he knew of a man by the name of Balaam. And the only thing he knew about Balaam had a reputation that if he blessed people, they would be blessed. And if he cursed people, they were cursed. You can follow me a little bit in this account, and I'm just going to speak from my heart in chapter 22 of Numbers. But Balak sent of his princes over to Balaam with the money that people would normally pay for divination if they wanted to find out the future or something. And I do not know what kind of how that Balaam lived altogether, but somehow when he came to God, God connected with him. He knew how to connect with God. So following God was not a new thing. I mean, I think Balaam knew how to follow God. But he carried in his heart a desire for wealth. He wanted to have his foot into both kingdoms. And so Balak's messengers asked Balaam if he would be willing to come and curse the Israelites. Balak felt that if he would get that curse on them, then he could have a victorious battle over them. And so Balaam inquired of God, and God said, no, you're not to go with these people. And so these people went back and told Balak, and Balak did not like this answer, so he sent more important princes with more money for Balaam, thinking that he could buy this man to do this curse for him. But Balaam again said, let me ask God again. And so he prayed again, and this time God told him to go. And I can only imagine the visions in Balaam's mind of wealth and honor that Balak offered to him. And he was probably real excited about going with them now. But yet he told them that he's going to be limited. He can only say what God allows him to say. He knew he was bound by God. And so Balaam got on his donkey, and he had two servants with him, and he went with these princes to go to King Balak. And as he was going along on his donkey, all of a sudden his donkey swerved off of the trail, went out into the field. And he hit the donkey, got him back on the trail, and then he was going through a place where there's wall on either side, and all of a sudden the donkey swerved to the side and mashed or crushed his foot against the wall. He smote him again and got him going. And then they came to a place where it was narrow between two walls. And all of a sudden, the donkey just went down under Balaam. And Balaam hit him again and said, man, if I had a sword, I'd kill you. Well, meantime, God opened the donkey's mouth, and the donkey asked him, how come did you hit me these three times? And then Balaam said, if I had a sword, I'd kill you. You're being contrary. But then God opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel standing there. And this angel told Balaam that if that donkey would not have taken you out of the way, I would have killed you. Ooh, Balaam fell on his face. Well, I didn't know that. In my mind, I think Balaam thought about, you know, well, God told him he can go. But God knew Balaam's heart. Was Balaam not tempting God? How many times do we have something that is so clearly in the Bible, and yet we seek further direction from God? Is that not tempting God? When we have it in His Word, when God tells us one thing in His Word, if we recognize who God really is, we should not have to be told twice. And I think that when you seek further direction from God after He says it so clearly in His Word, we are like tempting Him, and He will tell us whatever we want to hear. Just like He did for Balaam. The doctrine of Balaam. Seven times Balaam had got Balak to erect seven altars, and they sacrificed seven bullocks and seven rams on those altars. And every time after that, God would meet with Balaam, and Balaam would prophesy, and he would always speak a blessing. And then after the third time, Balak got fed up with this, but then Balaam went and prophesied again, and he spoke a blessing on Israel. But one thing that Balaam did, and in this portion of Scripture, he doesn't talk about it, but we can read it in Scriptures that it happened. And remember, I said, when Satan tries one tactic, he'll try another, if that doesn't work. And Balaam told Balak what they needed to do in order that God's blessing would be taken away from Israel. And Israel committed grievous whoredoms and idolatry with the people of Moab. And because of that, 24,000 Israelites lost their lives. Punishment from God for the evil they did. And after that, when Moses got that straightened out, they went out and fought against the Moabites and had a great victory. And Balaam was out there fighting with the Moabites against Israel, and he was slain in the battle. Balaam had a desire for wealth. And in the end, that had the upper hand with him because he kept it there, did not eradicate that. He had a desire for wealth. I did a little bit of a study on greed, and there's a scripture in Jude that talks about Balaam having a greed problem. And you might think you don't have a greed problem. I'm going to read some of my notes here. Greedy means having a selfish or intense desire for something. Greed says, I owe me. What's mine is mine because I've earned it, and I've got a lot more coming. Greedy people believe they deserve any good thing that could possibly come their way. It's hard to get a greedy person to part with their stuff. Why? Because they think that they've earned it. Greed is something you might think you don't struggle with. Greed is very subtle and very good at disguising itself. Behind phrases like, I'm trying to be saving. I'm trying to be a good steward of the things God has allowed me to have. When you stand in front of a mirror, it is just about impossible to see greed in yourself. Greedy people are not cheerful givers. they are reluctant to share. Greedy people are poor losers. Greedy people often have a culture of secrecy around them, often letting on like they have just barely enough to get by. Greedy people are not content with what they have. It makes no difference whether you are financially wealthy or whether you are financially poor, because greed is a heart issue. When a greedy person gives you something, there are often strings attached with hooks that cause you to feel used or guilty if you don't obey their directives. We need to be on guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. There's a story I would like to relate that I heard of a man that was a student youth pastor, and there was a Bible camp going on. And he was supposed to be worship leader that week. And to be worship leader that week, required him to have his guitar there. He had a guitar that was very special to him. And knowing children, he decided that he's going to get him a cheap guitar. And so he would keep his cheap guitar up on the stage. And when students or children would ask him if they could play his guitar, he would say, "Oh, sure, help yourself." And he'd point to the one up on the stage. And the other one he kept safely locked away in his case, off to the side. And he was thinking to himself that that's pretty good stewardship, actually, taking care of this other good one that God had allowed him to have. And when the students asked him if they could play with his guitar, he'd say, "Sure, help yourself," point to the one up on the stage. Well, he said about halfway through the week, it happened. A student, an eighth grade boy, came and asked him if he could play with his good guitar. Just briefly, he thought about lying to the man and telling him that he left the key in a case back in the cabin. But he knew that wasn't right. He was here trying to teach them it's wrong to lie. But he said, when you have greed, it makes you do things like that. So he put a smile on his face and said, "Sure." So he went over and opened the case and very carefully handed this to this eighth grade boy. And this eighth grade boy started playing his guitar. And to start with, he stood right there beside him, but then he felt kind of foolish. So he wandered off a little bit. But all the while he was walking around, he really kept looking at the boy playing his guitar. And he said, as luck or God would have it, all of a sudden a boy came running in and telling this boy that was playing the guitar that he was needed outside real quick. Well, this boy quickly leaned his guitar up against a railing and ran off the stage and outside. And he looked up there just in time to see his big special guitar slip sideways and clatter down on the stage. Quickly went up and retrieved it, but it had a dent in it now and a scratch. And he was so mad. He said he felt like strangling this guy. But then it opened his eyes to his own greed. Here he was more concerned about his guitar than he was about the soul of this young man. And he was ashamed. How many times do we allow our thinking that our possessions are more important than our children or other people? People are way more important than possessions. These possessions, so many of them, are here for only a few years. People have souls that live for eternal. I would like to turn to Matthew chapter 6, read verse 19 through 24. It says here, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. When we think that we can serve God and the devil, we only deceive ourselves. I mentioned earlier about discouragement. When you are doing life, you will find times when you feel discouraged. But how do you relate to that? The way Israel related to that, they started complaining. And when a group of people start complaining, that can really spread. I can imagine that as they were wandering through their wilderness, you know, people started muttering. And the muttering would get louder. And your neighbor would hear your muttering. And he's feeling the same misery that you are. And if that is left unchecked, where will that take you? It's better to never start. Some of you have heard this before, but I'd like to read a quote that I found about discouragement. And you might have heard it before, but I want to read this off and we'll just leave it for what it is. But it says here, it was advertised that Satan was putting his tools up for sale. On the date of the sale, he had them on open display, each marked with a price. They were a treacherous-looking lot of instruments. Hatred, envy, jealousy, deceit, lying, pride, greed, and so on. But laid apart on the side was a harmless-looking tool that looked very worn but was priced very high. One of his purchasers pointed to it and asked, "What is the name of this tool, and why is it priced so high?" Satan replied, "Oh, that is discouragement. It's a very successful tool because very few people realize it belongs to me." Discouragement is something that Satan uses to get people to focus off and away from God. May we always keep our eyes on God, and He is bigger than any obstacle that can come our way. With these thoughts, let's kneel for a word of prayer.